At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help, you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Welcome to the Umbrella Hour. This is Dr. On and my cohort, Xander Kegg, licensed social workers with me today. We will be interviewing Corinna Cohen, who writes about life having undergone sex reassignment surgery as a teenager in the 1990s, and co-hosts the Heterodorks podcast. Corinna's writing has appeared in Quillette and the Washington Post, and Corinna can be found at Heterodorks on Twitter. So make sure you follow Corinna. Welcome, Corinna.
Thank you so much.
Well, Corinna, you and I have known each other for a little bit of time. We're not lifelong friends, but we've known each other for a little bit of time, and we run in some similar circles, so to speak, even though we've never met in person. But virtually speaking, we run in some similar circles. I was interviewed by you on your Heterodorks podcast, and then I extended an invitation for you to come and be interviewed on the Umbrella Hour. So thank you so much for agreeing to do that.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation. It was great having you on Heterodorks also.
Thank you. I always listen to my own podcasts, and I really enjoyed that one. That was so much fun, especially talking about my not belligerence. What was the word? I forget the word that we used to describe me. Defiance, something like that.
Yeah,
incorrigible. Incorrigible.
I see.
That's right. We all should be more incorrigible, I think.
If everybody was incorrigible, then you'd have a lot of heartache, right? But there should be more people. I think the world needs, I would say, 20% incorrigible people. I think right now we only have 4%.
Okay, I'm with you then. I'm part of that.
You're with me. How dare you?
I know. So I really wanted you to come on the show and talk about an experience that you had recently in Ireland. I'm wondering, though, if you'd like to beforehand, just give people a little snapshot of some of the work that you've been doing. If you'd like to mention the organization that you co-founded, if you'd like to get a little bit more into that. And then I think that will help people understand when we go into talking about your time in Ireland recently.
Sure. Well, let's say that I transitioned about 30 years ago, turning 48 soon. And I started when I was 18. So it's been a long time since I've started medicalization. And do you know that the experience has been extremely variable in terms of the care given by professionals and the knowledge and standards that are exercised in the clinical setting? And in 2019, after meeting with a number of people who've been through that medicalization process and detransitioned, we talked about starting an organization that was, from a patient standpoint, that would try to work with providers to improve the standard of care and delivery of services for people who've undergone transition. That includes people who consider themselves transgender or transsexual or even detransitioners, or people who are in some other category but are still trying to work with these same sets of clinicians. So I and Carrie Callahan and a couple of other individuals started a group called the Gender Care Consumer Advocacy Network. And for the first couple of years of our organization, we had conversations with clinicians, talked about gaps in care. We wrote to our constituents and gave them ideas on how they could ask better questions in the clinical setting, or if they have been given a very low standard of care, how to write complaints to their medical boards. So we really did approach this from a patient's, or as we call it, a consumer standpoint. Then towards the end of 2021, I guess, there started being more bills that were being introduced to address the topic of child gender medicalization. And we found that some of these early bills were really quite too strict in how they were going about things, defining the gender care as child abuse, threatening to lock up providers under criminal charges. And we thought that that was a really bad approach. We saw that there were actually gaps between good standards of care and what was actually being provided, but we thought that there were better ways of addressing that. And so we had written a couple of letters to these legislatures asking them to consider our viewpoint and to take a different approach. And that was through 2022 for the most part. But then towards the end of 2022, World Professional Association for Transgender Health, WPATH, released version 8 of its standard of care guidelines. Although whether they're actually listing a standard of care, I think is debatable at this point. But they released version 8 of their standard, and it was bonkers. And so for the last year, I have been more active giving testimony in legislatures and working with other activists to try to more aggressively regulate this type of healthcare at a state level. And so I have been giving testimony in favor of bills that would, for the most part, the mechanism that I've been supporting is that these laws make it so that if these procedures are performed on anybody who is under 18, that that gives that person who's had those procedures a private right to sue for damages. And that's the mechanism that I support the most at this point, and that's most common in the laws that I've been testifying in favor of.
One of the things I find really interesting, just as a social worker, but also as somebody who was an activist for many years and has done advocacy for a number of years, the push for consumer advocacy organizations has, I mean, there's been a big push for that for decades now in all different areas, right, where we're protecting consumers. But I find it really interesting that in this specific case, right, in this particular case, when it comes to trans people or trans healthcare or gender affirming care, right, there's a lot of different ways that people talk about it. When consumers get together and want to advocate from that experience of being the consumer of these services, it gets shot down as somehow being anti-trans or transphobic, or there's a lot of different language around that. And it's coming from professional associations, which are representing and protecting doctors and other professionals in the medical field. And so why would we, like, I don't understand. What do you think is going on that in this particular case, we don't want to trust the consumers to drive policies, but we do when it comes to, say, psychiatric patients or highway safety, or, right? Like, why do you think there's such a difference here?
Well, there are a couple of different models for trying to understand why we even medicalize gender identity. So there was the older model, which is this idea that we've tried. The patient comes, they're having these problems with wanting to become a member of the opposite sex. We've tried therapy, they still want to transition. We've tried a number of antidepressants or other medical approaches for psychoactive drugs. We tried those didn't work. The patient still has these desires. So what we'll do then is carefully start building a plan and a pathway towards transition. We'll start with something that's we'll call the real life test, which requires that the patient live in their target sex role for some amount of time, a year or less, usually, typically. And if they're able to handle that, then we'll start process of hormone replacement therapy and other medical procedures even further down the line, so that there will be enough time for this individual to try this and see if that this is a useful therapeutic pathway for managing these compulsive feelings, right? Because wanting to change your sex really is, it has some compulsive element to it. So that's one model. It's really a model where we're trying to help the patient to find the most beneficial or least harmful pathway to getting to a state of health. So then there is this other model, which has really become dominant in the last 10 years, which is that within every person, there is an authentic self that needs to be actualized, and that inside of the trans people, there is we usually don't use the word soul, but that's the easiest way to understand it, because all the other ways of describing it are really just as abstract. But there's a true person inside of your body that's a member of the opposite sex. And the only way that you can achieve your embodiment goals is through taking cross-sex hormones, which we're going to pretend are actually the hormones that you should have been taking, because that's what fits with this metaphysical model. And that we'll also follow up and have surgeries to make your appearance more consistent with that of the opposite sex, facial feminization surgery, breast removal or breast implants, all these other sorts of ancillary procedures as well, because these are the things that are necessary for a person to become their true self. So I'm sure that there are other models that are similar or different to that, but those are predominantly the two models. And when you're talking about people who believe that the only way that they can become their true self is by following this pathway of medicalization, then they are going to align with the care providers, because the care providers in this model are not under any sort of obligation to heal or improve the physical health care of the patient. The only role that these clinicians have is to enable the desires of the consumers who are seeking access to these medications and surgical procedures. And so there's not an alignment between the patient's health and the provider's behaviors, because that's not what the provider's for.
It's really interesting. I did a training not that long ago where I was talking about ambiguous loss that many people feel in with gender transition. So the person themselves going through the gender transition and the loss of identity and the loss of role and the loss of people, right? There can be a lot of loss. And then also the people in our lives and the loss that they go through, our parents, you know, our children, our spouses, our partners, there's a lot. And so we don't generally talk about loss, but when one of the things that I was learning when I was doing research for this training that I led was that there's so many different ways to look at who we are and why we are who we are and how we are. And so you've outlined these two. And so when I was doing my research, I definitely came across these two. And then there's these additional layers to it, which is how we make sense of our own body and what our worldview is philosophically, economically, right? The way we think about things. And so that means that you could bring like 12 trans people into a room together and we would all be talking a completely different language, basically, when we're talking about who we are, why we are who we are, and what we're going to do about it and what it means in the world and how we want people to respond to it. And so that makes it so difficult to talk about this topic because there's no consensus on how do we frame this, right? There's no agreement on how do we respond to these desires, these needs, the compulsions, as you say, for some people, right? There's literally no consensus. And that's why I think WPATH, again, World Professional Association for Transgender Health, they've been in existence since 1979 under a different name, Harry Benjamin International Gender Dysphoria Association. And so they've drafted these standards of care over all these years. So they're at version 8. I think the attempt was to try and formulate a way to think about this in a way that was the most destigmatizing. I think that's because at the time people were like, you're crazy. You can't do that. I'm not going to do that for you. And there were these few people around the country and around the world who were like, oh no, I know a little bit about this. I learned it from this person or that person, right? We had Dr. Harry Benjamin who was teaching people about this. And so I think that was the initial motivation. I could be wrong, but I'm very optimistic. You know, that's the way I am in the world. So I want to think good about everybody and everything for the most part. So I'm like, yeah, reducing stigma, that's a good thing. I'm behind reducing stigma, but we've come a long way from that.
We will take our first commercial break. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
The station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our first commercial break. Our guest this hour is Corinna Cohn.
Yeah, reducing stigma, that's a good thing. I'm behind reducing stigma, but we've come a long way from that. You mentioned something about the standards of care 8 being bonkers. I don't know if we have enough time to really dive into it, but you want to just give us a brief little, like, what do you mean by bonkers?
Well, probably the thing that most people would find pretty amazing about it is that it has included eunuch as a gender identity. And not only has it included eunuch as a gender identity, but the chapter on eunuchs is informed in part by a website called the Eunuch Archives, which includes stories or fictionalized fantasies about castrating boys. So that's pretty bonkers to me. There's a chapter on non-binary, which, Xander, as you were saying, if you got 12 trans people in a room, they wouldn't necessarily agree. No two would necessarily agree on their experiences or the meaning of them. But when you add in people who have non-binary identities, now like multiply that by another factor, right? Because I don't know that there's really any non-binary people who even necessarily have the same self-conception from two different time periods, because that's very fluid. So the fact that we would take a population that says, I don't feel like I'm male or female, and then say, well, great, here's your medical options for that. It's a little strange, because I think that every person, whether or not they're identified as trans, has a feeling of discomfort with the stereotypes that are associated with their sex role. And that we would say, if you're particularly challenged or distraught with how these sex roles are applicable to you, then we'll create an entire category under transgender that's applicable to you.
I think too that we have people who microdose. So I looked at that non-binary section as a way of covering everybody's backs, so to speak, because it requires a physician to prescribe HRT for the individual who has to now embark on this journey of microdosing. And then they guide the physician when they want to stop or when they want to continue. And I think that was perhaps a measure that they took to once again cover the physician, because if they didn't include non-binary, then where would they put that information? Who would be held accountable for that? My background is in compliance, and so I was focused on what you said earlier about not cutting physicians off and sending them to prison, and I agree. I think that's really drastic. However, I think there needs to be some accreditation process in place so that it's independent from WPATH and it's independent from any clinic. And Joint Commission years ago, they formed back in 1951 because healthcare wasn't that great. There were safety issues back in 1951. We've always had safety issues, and we've always skirted around physicians. And I'm not against physicians. I have I've worked with many of them. I have a high regard for many of them. But I do believe that if physicians aren't skilled enough, and they haven't had the number of volumes that they've taken care of in surgery, they have no business operating on people and leaving them high and dry, which has happened. Your statement earlier, when you were informing us about this wonderful opportunity that you embarked on with someone else now to form this coalition, as I would see it, as where you are providing consumer advocacy for people. Were you aware of WPATH's open letter that came from the transgender community?
Yes. It's been a couple of years since I've read it. And I don't have all of the material of it in front of me, so I don't know that I'd be able to comment on it presently.
I think they were very upset, to say the least, that they had been abandoned. There was no backup plan. And again, nobody was held accountable. And they were calling for better oversight and accreditation. And I do feel that needs to happen.
I don't know if it is even feasible for it to happen, unfortunately. Maybe if you had the right bite in the enforcement mechanism. But after having conversations with clinicians from all over the country in many different states, I can tell you that it's not typical for clinicians to follow WPATH. Even WPATH licensed clinicians don't follow WPATH. because they see it as too restrictive. And because there are clinicians who won't follow WPATH, if somebody insists on following WPATH, they'll lose their patients because the patients will just go find whoever is more accommodating. So there's been a race to the bottom in terms of some people would say getting rid of the barriers to care, or some people would say undoing gatekeeping. But really, it's gotten to the point where I think there was something on Matt Walsh's show this week where one of his producers got a letter authorizing surgery for after one phone call. And the producer, who is a straight man who was pretending to be a trans woman to get an orchiectomy, by pretending, he didn't do anything with his appearance. He was just saying that's what he was. Otherwise, he looked like any other. You can imagine what a producer for a conservative talk show host would look like. That's what he looked like. And you have these letters being written that are not even qualifying whether the person requesting them has the competency for the procedure. So at this point, there's really zero barriers for anybody getting surgery that's for the most part covered by most insurers at this point. It's just you want breast enhancement, you want your testicles removed, get a consultation with this group, and the only thing that they'll do is have a 10-minute conversation with you and then say, sure, go get your surgery.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I have read accountings of people complaining that you can be a WPATH member and no one really is watching what you are doing. But I personally call for oversight because I think WPATH has some skin in the game. That's all about money. And that has been a huge concern, which is why we have the Department of Justice going after organizations that filed claims that were unfounded or they weren't really medically necessary. I was talking to Xander about this the other day. We don't even have the third payers involved. If the third payers got involved, the people who pay, right, on claims, because we know insurance companies do actuarial studies. We know they look into mortality, risks in every aspect, including medical care. If we could just get those guys even involved at a level that then holds the provider accountable, because the idea that people have been left abandoned isn't just happening in the trans community, it's happening all across the sector in the market in healthcare. And that's, I think, just unfortunate, but it's continuing. We haven't really done anything. So it's admirable that you have this consumer group going and that you are actually showing up and talking about it.
Absolutely. Well, that I think this leads us right into talking about why were you in Ireland? And what was your experience there, if you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. In 2023, the European affiliate organization with WPATH in Europe is called EPATH, the European Professional Association for Transgender Health. They had their annual conference in Killarney, Ireland. There is a newer group that has been created that was originally principally oriented around families where children were looking towards transition as a goal, called GenSpect. And they're they're skeptical of some of the trends in transgender medicine. And so GenSpect deliberately held their own conference in Killarney at the same time with a different slate of attendees. So I went to Ireland to attend both conferences. I did attend the EPATH conference, and I thought when I was going to attend, I'd never been to a conference like that before. I wasn't really sure what I was doing. I know some things better now than when I did, but initially I got kicked out of the conference. And then I came back thinking maybe they'll kick me out a second time. I have no idea. But then I was invited to purchase a badge. And as long as I was a registered attendee, then I was able to go and hang around and talk to people, which is mostly what I wanted to do. And I also attended the GenSpec conference, where, again, I spoke with people and had conversations. And as I'm sure both of you know, just talking to people, even if you have differences between you, just the fact that you're having a conversation can open up all sorts of possibilities that didn't exist before you had that conversation. So mostly I was going there just to talk to people to see what might happen.
We are headed into our second commercial break. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at lowes.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
The station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our second commercial break. Our guest this hour is Corinna Cohn.
So mostly I was going there just to talk to people to see what might happen. And there were a number of interesting little conversations and it was interesting. Little vignettes. There were a number of little vignettes.
I think people are more willing to have conversations with people when you're face to face, whereas on the internet, people are so removed from each other that it's easier to just pounce on somebody on the internet. And when you're confronted face to face, then it's like, well, I'm here, you're here, let's have a conversation. And I think that the people who are willing to do that are going to mostly be doing it with good faith. I would imagine, though, that there are people who would want nothing to do with having a conversation with you or somebody like me or on, who knows, they would rather leave the conference than engage. Because I hear that happening all over the place. People are pulling their registrations to conferences if somebody's going to be a presenter or they hear that somebody's going to be attending. They just like, oh, I can't be there. Like it's a crisis that they're trying to manage.
Yeah. Luckily, I'm not that fragile.
Did you have some conversations that you considered to be worthwhile where you walked away learning something you didn't already know and you feel like they also did? Maybe they acknowledged you by saying thank you, something like that. Did you have some conversations like that?
I did. There was a conference panel that was on there are four presenters on this panel talking about the topic of what do we do about the fact that we are being accused of being ideologues. And the panel included the former EPATH president on it, but it had a couple of other presenters. And there were four different people, four different perspectives, but one of them was a doctor from Poland, Bartosz Grabski, who I spoke with afterwards and had a really good conversation with. And he was making the point that when patients start treating clinicians like they're just walking prescription paths, and that patients can come in and demand procedures and dictate the dosage that they're getting and not have to demonstrate any sort of competency to prove informed consent, that the doctors really have no role except to press a button, right? And he was making the point that the doctors really ought to be more, the doctors have judgment about whether the patients will even benefit from these procedures. And the doctors should not be treated as though they're enemies or whether they should be bullied, but as professionals that really study this topic and can learn from research and consult with their other professionals to try to understand what's helpful for the patient. So that was a really good conversation. And as a result of that, although I had come into EPATH thinking that there were probably a lot of people that were just thinking along the same lines, what I learned is that there actually is quite a lot of diversity of thought inside of the membership of EPATH. And I would say to the people who are on my side, who are trying to work towards more regulation, to not just assume that everybody who's on the opposite side thinks the same thing. Because when it comes down to it, there's actually a lot of different viewpoints. And if you just think that everybody has already come up with a conclusion that's in opposition to yours, you're just going to be depriving yourself of opportunities to have your mind changed or to change somebody else's mind.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm constantly saying that the trans community is not a monolith. Like, no community is a monolith, right? And so these providers, I love that doctor was willing to say that, because more and more people need to just talk from their own point of view, right? As a physician, this is my perspective on that. I was a member of WPATH for a number of years, and I was on faculty at the Global Education Institute for WPATH. So I was part of the group that taught people who wanted to become certified as gender therapists in particular. And in the foundational course, it was all of the occupations. So it was surgeons and different kinds of doctors. And I know that there's a range, a very wide range of views on these things. And I think most people know that. But when it comes to making the arguments in the news or via social media, it everything gets like boiled down to these very simplistic and narrow ideas. And if you don't subscribe to it 100%, then you're labeled on one side or the other. And I'm glad that GenSpect happened at the same time as EPATH. And I know that GenSpect offered EPATH ticket holders free entrance into their conference because they want to have this dialogue. And I think that's a bridge I'm part of building. That's a bridge you're part of building. I think the Umbrella Hour, the radio show, we're doing that when we're talking to people who have very different ideas about things, because we want people to know about that. But actively engaging and bridging the different, you know, or finding a way to, like, I'm not out to convince people that they're wrong or they're right. Let's just talk about it so that we can come to an understanding of, like, is there a way for us to move forward with a bit more understanding and a bit more consensus on some things so that people are not being harmed by medical treatments? Because, I mean, especially children, isn't that the goal of almost everybody, right? If you care about human beings, right, yeah. Your goal is to protect their physical, mental, and emotional well-being, and especially children. So,
well, I would like to bring that back around, Xander, to something that I was saying at the beginning of our conversation, which is that there are two different models of understanding why we medicalize gender identity. And that point that you just said, is it not the case that we do not want to harm people? That's not going to be received the same way by people who believe that going through the natural process of puberty is harmful by itself. So you're already going to run into a lot of problems finding consensus, because our definitions of what constitutes a form of violation of somebody's health status is totally different.
There's always this tension of doing what is ethical, that also doesn't rob people of agency, right, of their own freedoms, and being protectionist or paternalistic is, that's probably what they would say about that doctor from Poland, that he's being paternalistic, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's like trying to find a way. It's like, absolutely, it's harmful in some people's minds to medicalize gender nonconforming children towards a path of transsexuality. And then it's also considered a harm to not do that because of the distress of going through the natal puberty. Absolutely. So that's why I like this idea of, if we bring a bunch of people together, there's going to be a lot of people who see both of those aspects and beyond, people who specialize in bioethics in particular, who can help with talking about all the various ethical considerations. And there are many, many ethical considerations. It's a whole field of study, right? You get a PhD in ethics. I mean, it's vast. And so bringing in just that lens in particular, I think would be really helpful. And I know that that lens is incorporated into a lot of things, but not a lot of people in my experience are persuaded by ethics. They're just not. I wish they were. So it's like, okay, what other ways can we be persuasive? And what concessions do we need to make? And what concessions do other people from other points of view need to make, right? To come to solutions. Concessions almost always need to be made. What are they? And what's the cost of that? There's always a cost.
You said that people are not always persuaded by ethics, Sander, but I would argue that people are always persuaded by ethics in retrospect.
Yes, I know. Retrospective perspective is, what do they say, hindsight? If we only knew then what we know now, it's, boy, where's that time capsule? Time travel capsule, absolutely.
So, somewhere down the line, there'll be a lot of people asking the question, why didn't anybody do anything?
Well, now that we have all of this social media, what people are going to be able to do instantaneously is bombard all of those people with the tens of thousands of blog posts, podcasts, YouTube videos, Rumble videos, all of, and saying, here are all the people who were doing all those things that you weren't listening to. That's what I'm thinking is going to happen.
Might come out in the courtroom.
Oh gosh, that'll be ugly. But you know, that's what's happening here right now in Florida, right? We're going through the legal process with a recent law that our governor enacted, and a local judge has said, this doesn't smell right. I think this might be unconstitutional. So we'll see what's going to happen. We are almost at the end. Do you have anything you would like to impart? If you have any words of wisdom, if you have any statement that is quintessentially Corinna that you would like to end us with.
Sure. This is not anything that we covered, but it's been something that I've been talking about on my Twitter and on my own podcast lately. And that's this concept of allyship. So I do want to make a brief comment about allyship, which I think is a terrible crime. Nobody should be an ally. So what I would say instead is, instead of making yourself an ally, make yourself a listener. Listen to people. don't necessarily take somebody's side and then champion their cause and then speak over them and run all of their comms for them. Just listen, ask thoughtful questions. It doesn't have to be somebody that you agree with. And even if it is somebody that you agree with, still be a good listener instead of an active doer. At some point, maybe you will take an action, but just focus on being a good listener. That's my takeaway.
I love that. I actually lead allyship trainings, and I say every single time, like, you need to meet a whole lot of people from the group with which you want to become an ally with or to. And until then, you don't know enough. You don't know enough to champion the cause of, say, the trans community, which I think is a misnomer. Mm-hmm. But let's just say the trans, there's no way, because you'd have to meet, I'd say at a minimum, I don't know, maybe a few hundred of us to really get a sense of how diverse we are. And I think that would put enough perspective in place for a person that they might decide to just remain a listener, because it's so difficult to champion a cause that is so multi-pointed, right? So complex.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, Corinna.
Yeah, I don't want to bum anybody out if they've considered themselves an ally, but if you're not a good listener, then you're not going to be a good ally either.
We have come to the end of our hour. We have come to the end of the hour. You were listening to Corinna Cohn, and we hope to have Corinna return in the future. Our next show, The Umbrella Hour, will feature another guest, a journalist, Lisa Celine Davis. We hope that you will tune in to The Umbrella Hour. Thank you for listening.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.